You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe, with my partners in soccer, Susanna Collins, a couple of puppies, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw over here.
I don't like that.
Like, massaging each other?
I wish it was a massage.
Oh, hitting each other?
Yeah, I like strong physical contact. Gotcha. That was too, like, that was like a feather. It's like a Bobby Warshaw feather.
Interesting.
On my back.
We also learned, by the way,
walk off him just.
That Bobby, in addition to being Bobby, he does meditate for the first 3 minutes of shows, which is why he never speaks. Is that right, Bobby? You're technically meditating in preparation for the rest of the show.
I don't know how we're just going to skip over the fact that David doesn't like back scratches.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's strange.
It's real weird.
I didn't want to talk about it because I felt like it might be, you know, kind of like throwing you under the bus a little bit.
I don't know, but that was a pretty good pivot there from Mr. Warshaw.
Can we also discuss Weeby's shirt just for a second? Because it is so awesome. Mm. I can't stop looking at it.
Nobody else has this shirt at this table. It is the taco slash cactus slash
hot pepper.
Jersey from FC Dallas, in case you're watching on YouTube. But nobody at this table has ever worn this jersey. And they don't have it. And they've never done anything with it that's
continue
important
the show,
or
Andrew.
Noteworthy.
Looks great.
Cool. Great. Big show coming up here. Week 9. We had some midweek action. We had 5 games. We got some learnings off those, including a San Jose team that does not look like trash anymore. They're figuring out that man-to-man system from Mateus Almeida. Training compensation.
That was a very Ben Bear ratio, by the way.
It was. And solidarity payments. Paul Tenorio of The Athletic is going to join us to talk about that, as well as his article in Time with Bob Bradley in LA, Expansion Day Dreaming. We had a bunch of you send in, like, literal PowerPoint presentations on how you would organize the league. I mean, you're building, like, maps and tables and examples. It's a lot.
That's one thing we have learned. People love being geographic commissioners of Major League Soccer. Yeah. Then the next one is when we get into the playoffs, and everyone's like, this is how I would do it.
Correct.
And I got to read through, like, 80 of these essays to get to the one that's like, yeah, I guess this one kind of makes sense.
For sure. We have a couple of them, though, and a monster mailbag here with much more than just that. So let's get started. Midweek, Susanna, you got to see some live soccer.
I did.
You went to Yankee Stadium.
I did.
You saw Dome Torrent and NYCFC win their second straight game. I guess we should all just admit that we're under pressure.
NYCFC is back, baby.
Hey.
Back, baby. No, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it was the prettiest win I've ever seen, because it certainly was not. But considering that Dome himself had basically said that, yeah, I'm on the hot seat, I'm under pressure, I think the fact that they've gotten 2 wins in a row is obviously very nice and kind of helps his cause. Look, like, you know, to me, this the more glaring thing about this game that stood out was Chicago, and that this is a team with so many weapons and so many powerful attacking weapons, and they couldn't come up with anything. And it's, I don't know, it was more of a disappointment. It was more of a statement about Chicago and sort of their lack of creativity rather than a big win for NYCFC. And while I am happy for NYCFC and you know, it's great they're moving on up in the standings, I'm a little bit worried about Chicago in that attack.
There's still a red flag on that result. Yes. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
The Fire are definitely in a weird place. There's times they've almost gone from Pano overcoaching the team to the more laissez-faire approach, and when it clicks, it's amazing. There have been 3 or 4 games this year when they have looked very, very good, but on the flip side, we've seen games like last night when it just hasn't clicked and it hasn't come together.
Yeah, and I mean, and Yankee Stadium's a tough place to play, we all know that, so I mean, perhaps that had something to do with it, but there was a real lack of creativity, and it was kind of underwhelming on both sides. I will say, though, Hebert, the new guy for NYCFC, he has looked really, really good the last 2 games, and so I feel like he's a guy that's going to pay some dividends for them, so that was encouraging.
He had some moments in Minnesota too. They would have 3 in a row, Sean John with that error, and a lot of other errors in that game by NYCFC as well, but maybe a little bit of an uptick Wednesday night win. They'll take that for sure. I mean, 0-0 for Minnesota and LA, but I will take Julian Araujo looking good the youngster at right back, when he came off the field, it felt like soccer Twitter had jinxed him, because basically we all spent that entire game saying, Zlatan doesn't look great. Minnesota doesn't look great. This is kind of a game that lacks something related to a cutting edge and good goal scoring chances. But this kid at right back looks good. And I think Rolf Felcher comes back, stick with him. GBS loves him. He had to come off in this game for what looked like a non-contact injury, so keep your eye there. But another one of these young academy products that is starting to move through, and when they get into the first team, look like they belong. But I don't think there's any other story, any other result performance that's more impressive than Montreal. They were like on the tarmac 4 hours before this game in New England. They didn't have...
Who needs warm-ups? I used to show up late to my game, so I didn't have to warm up.
Yeah, you don't ever warm up. You're always late for men's league.
That's how I roll.
Exactly.
No also, my there. Body moves similar and with similar power to the players on the Montreal Impact.
And so Darren Rovell as well.
Yeah, no tight air. No Nacho Piatti. Weebs, now we have to run a 40.
Yeah, okay. I'm actually down for that.
Yeah, okay. Let's. We're going to need about 80 ankle braces, Anders.
This is really going to happen.
So can we get this on the ETR credit card? We're going to need about all of that. We'll probably need a giant cushion for him to run into, because I don't think Weeby could stop either.
Right. The speed that I'm going to be going at is... Yeah. is
well, you speed, know, I'll be flying at.
Turf doesn't... I'm going to need like deep spikes for that. Anyway, Montreal 3-0.
There's not enough budget for this, by the way. Yeah, Montreal gets a 3-0 win against the Revs. For the first 45 minutes, 55 minutes, they didn't give up a single chance. So you mentioned tight air and Piatti not in. But this team came out and they played clean defensively. Their lines were perfect the entire time. On the road with some rotated players, you've got, Bryit Grind? How wrong did I just say that?
I don't even know who that is now.
Zachary Bryant.
Oh, boy.
Say it for me.
I'm not going to. Nice. I'm going to let you just...
Okay, cool.
I'm going to let you just flounder.
And, of course, my legendary guy, Shamit Shoham, in central midfield. So they were clean defensively, and Maxi Rudy had one of those games where you're like, Maxi Rudy's really good in this league. Maxi Rudy can do a lot of things. He covered a ton of ground. He picked up the ball, helped create the attack, was in dangerous spots in the box, and you're like, yeah, it's one of those days where you're convinced by him. Obviously didn't score, and then the Revs laid down, and Cody Cropper drops a ball on the line. Shamit Shoham puts it away, but Montreal outplayed them the entire game. And yes, that's partially on the Revs and where they're at right now. But for Montreal to turn around from what they went through with that travel schedule, getting left basically at the airport on Tuesday, coming back to the airport on Wednesday, flying in last minute, and then they get 3 points on the road in Major League Soccer is pretty big.
They are in second place in the Eastern Conference. They have played 8 away games and just 1 home game.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really had Nacho Piatti for much of the season, just played 3 games. This is a team. I know they lost 7-1 to Sporting Kansas City, but this is a team. You go back to it. Organized and effective. And it's working for them. A big win for them.
And I think they have a few more weapons this year.
Yeah.
So when Piatti's back, I'm excited to watch them, because I don't think it's 100% on his shoulders.
They do not have a weapon like Shea Salinas, though. I say that and I'm sincere right now. 2 goals in Seattle. He had a goal at the weekend. He's got 3 on the season.
I think he has 4.
Really?
He's their leading scorer.
Man, he's scoring so many, I can't keep up. He's got the C. The man-to-man is working for San Jose, Bobby. San Jose have a big game this weekend at Dallas on Saturday. That's on Univision and free on Twitter at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. But 2-2 against Seattle is respectable. And had they held on in the second half, they might have won this game.
They outplayed the Sounders for the first, whatever it was, 55 minutes.
I mean, it's fun to watch. I don't fully understand what I'm watching, but it's fun to watch. So maybe you can help translate a little bit as to what they're doing right.
Where do we start? So I think talking about Montreal is a good transition, because Montreal are the ultimate zonal team. They're 2 lines of 4, a line of 4 defensively and a line of 5 in the midfield is very clear. And the idea is every single player has a sliver of the field, a channel vertically in the field. If your player comes into that channel, you take him. If he leaves that channel, you give him to the next player. With the San Jose Earthquakes, they do not have those zones. They do not have that channels. You pick up a guy and you follow him anywhere he goes. If you're marking the forward and he goes back to the goalkeeper, you follow him all the way there. The benefit to it is nothing tactically. I don't think you could make a sound logical argument on why this is the right way to play. If a team had 2 weeks to prepare playing against this way to play, they would beat it almost every time. The beauty is that, A, teams don't have 2 weeks to prepare. They have 3 days at a time midweek during a rush season. And B, 23 of the other 24 teams play the other way. So even if you do get 3 days, it's not enough time to fully understand what you are supposed to do. There is nothing magical about this. It is about the uniqueness and about the element of surprise. And the last 3 weeks, it has worked.
Christian Espinoza looks good too.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Lima is back. He had a couple of nice moments of interplay with Shea Salinas. And then that first goal from Salinas is, it's magnificent. Mm-hmm. Sounders do what they do. Nico Ladero looked a lot better in this game than he did in the weekend against LAFC. Had some passes that just made me kind of like shudder and gave me goosebumps because the vision is out of this world. Two goals late on, they pull it back. Good result.
Two goals, I think, in 64
seconds.
Yeah,
it's just like bam, bam.
Yeah.
And you thought maybe they were going to push on just because home crowd, they're, you would think, a better team. But I've learned that don't think when it comes to Major League Soccer sometimes.
Can I talk about 45 seconds about last game specifically, last
sure.
night? Because it was really interesting what the Sounders did.
Nerded out.
The Sounders played Nico Ladero at center striker. Their goal was to play Ladero at striker, have him move around, and pull a defender out. In doing so, they hope to have Jordan Morris, who played wing, run into that. The second thing they hope to do is have Kim Kihi, because I mentioned that San Jose man marks. Well, they man mark 9 of the 10 field players. There's always a free man. Both one of the Earthquakes defenders and one of the opposing defenders are free, which means that the Sounders hope to use Kim Kihi, the free player in that, to go into the midfield totally unmarked. The problem is it didn't work. But it's really interesting on how do you play the Earthquakes right now, because the first four teams, who was it, the Red Bulls and LAFC and Montreal that beat San Jose, basically played the exact same way that they always play, and it worked. All of a sudden, Portland, SKC, and the Sounders try to do something different, because as I said, there are very logical and obvious ways to approach playing against this man-marking system. The hard part is trying to switch within the 3 days, you play into what the Earthquakes want to do. So it'll be interesting to see how teams approach playing this Earthquakes team. Do they try and take the logical advantages, or do they stick with what they do, like LAFC did, and just try and pound home what they do every week?
We'll find out this weekend, Saturday, in Dallas, San Jose, going to try to keep it rolling. I mean, they're not at the bottom anymore. That's certainly not the case. They've pushed up almost to the playoff line.
Oh, but we started talking lies.
Hey, man, but that beginning.
It's never too early.
That beginning, we were really dumping on them. They're starting to at least have some sort of momentum. The momentum has been sucked out of one team, though. FC Cincinnati. 4 games without a win, 3 of those at home, 2 of them losses at home. They have 1 shot on goal in 4 games.
Tell us again how much fun you had at FC Cincinnati and how sold you were. Here's that giant mug of FC Cincinnati that you were just slurping down.
I was guzzling the Kool-Aid.
Guys, the march.
Hey, the march was great. The march was great. And the result was great that day. Yeah, the result was great that day. But
the result is always great for an expansion team the first time they play at home, the first time they play a new stadium. Everyone always has fun and loves it.
Back to reality, though.
Yeah.
For Cincinnati, unfortunately. Fernando Adi's coming back, though. He's been reinstated after dealing with that substance abuse policy after the issues that he had. So that's good. But they have created the fewest chances in Major League Soccer, Susanna. And I saw that grimace. I noticed that. How do you come back now? How do you go from momentum and stadium openers maybe we're still missing something?
I really, really hate to do this and be like the ultimate Debbie Downer here, but I don't see it really getting much better for FC Cincinnati just based solely on talent. I don't look at that roster and say, oh, but they've got so-and-so and they can turn around. Maybe they're just in a slump right now. It's just they are playing sort of like a USL team, and they sort of still have that identity right now. And while that hot start was so much fun, and I'm so glad we all enjoyed it when we did, I don't see how this is going to get better for them unless they get some people in. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Anybody disagree? Adi change it? Kakuta Mane going to have a hot streak? Maybe Roland Lamont? I mean, he's been known to have like 3-goal games.
There are guys on that team that can score goals in Major League Soccer and make a difference. Not someone that will carry a team for 32 games. And most of the characters you just mentioned aren't guys who are going to show up for 100% of their performances and play at a top level. But to what was just discussed with San Jose, the players on San Jose know who they are and they can enjoy the way they're playing because they believe in what they're doing. I can't say the same for FC Cincinnati. FC Cincinnati doesn't have a roster that doesn't belong on a Major League Soccer field. They just have a team where you need to find some advantages that exist for you and try and use that against opponents consistently and then have a belief that it'll work game in and game out. And I think we talked about this with Charlie Davies when he was here. He said one of the Revs teams he played on, we knew we'd come back when we were down because we knew we had this that we were good at and we would always get chances from it. And that doesn't exist for FC Cincinnati right now. And Part of that is you're putting together a roster at the last minute and everyone's getting to know each other and it's hard. But the other part of it, I think, is they haven't decided what they are.
They changed it a couple times.
Exactly. They went out and got center backs, came out and played high, scored some goals because it was fun. Now they don't know who they are. So it's a moving target for them. And it's something that they have time to figure out. And I think they have to bring someone in the summer just to an extent of you're continuing to build a roster. This isn't just 2019, right? This is you got to build this team up over the next few years.
Yeah, for sure. The flip side, they're going to be in New York to take on the Red Bulls in Harrison, I should say, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. Kaku got two more games for that incident in Kansas City. A lot of people saying that that's not enough. If you go look at some of the comparables, it seems like it's maybe a little bit lighter than certainly I expected them to come down with. But two games is what that final decision was for Kaku. So he's out for this one. BWP is there. Christopher from Brooklyn says this, Bobby. Would it be better to bench BWP to add a second striker to the formation or some bigger tactical change? Because one of the things about that Montreal result against the Revs is that it put under the microscope the Red Bulls result against the Revs. So now what for Chris Armas?
And what's the number? BWP has one goal in his last 16 games?
Something like that. I mean, at some point, the number doesn't matter. He's not putting the ball in the back of the net.
It's a fair question to ask. My only point is, I said many times on this show that the Red Bulls have tried some new things. I think it was the right decision to try new things. But you also have to acknowledge it hasn't worked. Now they need to revert back. So this lack of success that BWP has had was not in the same scheme in which he had the original success. So you cannot then say that he won't have success in the future if they revert back to the original commitment to the original scheme. Does that make sense?
It does, but doesn't that go back to what we argued about in the playoffs, which is once you revert once and once you kind of move on, doesn't it become a lot harder to go back?
Yeah.
Like once you open the box, it's hard to shut it.
This was the 2016 season for Jesse Marsh, when he came out and tried to play the 4-2-2-2 and bring Verón in and change the way the team was, and it didn't go well, and they went back to who they were. And in the playoffs, they ended up going out because they couldn't create goals in the playoffs. But you need to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's where your base point is right now, which is this hasn't worked. Try and find your identity. Also, get some confidence back into this group, right? Get BWP scoring goals, playing in a press where he's getting opportunities in a natural spot. Then maybe you can continue on the back end to work on some of these things and have a couple other wrinkles. And I think Jorgensen should bring something new that they haven't had in the past in this group. So at some point you'd hope just his individual characteristics bring something new forward.
The underlying question to this too is one of the reasons the Red Bulls changed was that teams changed the way they played against them.
Yep.
Teams aren't even trying to pass against the Red Bulls. They are knocking it long. So while I do think they will revert back, and reverting back gives BWP a better chance to succeed, there does have to be an entire rethink about whether the Red Bulls can do what they've done in 2019 with the way teams play against them.
Does anyone else find it tough to take Bobby seriously when he looks like he's trying out for like the Beastie Boys? This is an intense like late 90s look.
Tell Brooklyn, but it's a sweet hat. If you're not watching on YouTube, Bobby's got the 94 USA World Cup hat that looks like he's mowed about 3,000 lawns in it. it's got a nice sweat mark across it right there. Let's talk Sporting Kansas City here, and they're taking on the Revs on Saturday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. They're 8th in the West. They're 7th on points per game. They've got 9 points from 7. Anonymous from St. Louis hit us up, and he thinks all the talk about where things are going with them, which is, you know, trending downward, is off. Dear Diary, says this anonymous person, which this person always texts us that to start things. That's their tagline, apparently. Matt Doyle is overblowing the whole slump thing. I would like the first ever guarantee to be this, that they're going to take 12 points between now and the end of May. That's 6 matches, 5 of which are at home. He says put it on the wall. So those matches are
New England at home, Atlanta at home, at DC United, Vancouver at home, the Sounders at home, and then a midweek game, I believe, against the LA Galaxy.
That is correct. That is correct. Now, the issue is they've got some injury problems. Andy Edwards at The Athletic had a nice story on this. He had the stats that we pulled out, missing Roger Espinoza. They're not good. Matt Beisler's out for 2 to 4 weeks with a hamstring strain. So, Botan Barath or Abdul Guatubaye.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Roger Espinoza, they'll fill in. Roger Espinoza is going to miss 2 to 3 months, basically half of the remaining season. So, like, 12 to 14 games, you would think. He has a left PCL injury. And then you've got Rodney Wallace out. You've got he's out for the whole season, I think, with the hip. I mean,
Eric Hurtado is already out.
Yeah, Jalen Lindsey is out. Yeah, I mean, injuries have attacked them. this is an issue right now.
Juan Cousin, mic drop time right
now. Juan Cousin.
Give me the love, Malaysian
Johan
Messi.
Johan Cousin. He's the new left back, apparently. The number 10 who was supposed to change the attack is playing left back.
I still would say...
You said supporter shield.
I said supporter shield beginning of the season. I don't believe that anymore because of this situation. That's not going to happen. And the way the playoff system's set up now, it's going to be about, like, let's get every single spot we can and let's get every single point. But I would say overall, when you look at this league, one, the identity Peter Vermees has put into this team so guys can come in and fill spots because they understand their roles. And two, still the quality on that roster across the board. And I mean, you named all the guys missing. That doesn't include Gerso, Nemeth, Shallowy, Felipe Gutierrez, like some Uli Sanchez.
Rowe, Gianluca Busio.
Right. Still some of the best talent,
have talent
in this league. I would say that you come off CCL and that brings you in and out of the league mentally, and now you have a consistent stretch. And I think, honestly, at times this could be a good thing because how are you going to get Busio games in a Sporting Shield run? No, now you get a chance to get him games. It's unfortunate Jalen Lindsay's hurt, but you've got other guys that you can give a shot here as well. So I think overall, KC's okay, but I'm going to go with this. I'm going to say 12 points over these six.
Wow. Busio's going to be with the U-17s a little bit too, so he'll leave. You're puzzled. What's going on?
Well, their starting 11 is still pretty dang good, right? Cecenovic's at left back. They still have their starting left back. They still have the other three defenders.
Well, Quaze started the last two.
Okay, so left back is a concern, but Roger Espinoza out, Kellen Rowe comes in. Kellen Rowe is an all-star in this league at his best. They still have the front three with Daniel Shallowy coming off the bench. And I just want to point out, basically until Roger Espinoza is back, and I'm only going as far as mid-August, they only have two midweek games, right? So it's not like they've got a packed schedule. Plenty of teams have gone a whole season. Toronto did it for 2 years, pretty much only playing your guys. Like, you don't need to rotate that often.
Also, you have Gold Cup break in there.
And you have Gold Cup break, but you don't have to rotate that often if you have games every 7 days. The two midweek games are a little bit of a problem. Maybe you punt those, but this Kansas City team can still put out a ball in 11, so I'm not that concerned. The bigger concern is what happened with Toronto and the mental fatigue.
What happens now without Roger, though? That's my question.
I think that Goss said it. They have Peter Vermees. This is a guy who gets the best out of his players. When players come in to fill those roles, they know exactly what is expected of them. He puts them in good positions, and so I trust him. If there's one coach in this league where I think, they're scuffling a little bit, I have zero doubt in my mind that they're going to climb their way out of this and be a playoff team because I trust Peter Vermees.
For the Espinoza answer, because you were asking?
It is. I think it's Rowe.
Of course it's Rowe.
I get what you're saying. I like Kellen Rowe as a player. I like him as a person.
But this is
not
his role.
I get it. No, he's not Roger.
But this is his role. Bring the same this thing is his, as Roger.
No, but he's covering a ton of ground and getting on the ball with short touches and connecting play. Not playing the final pass, not being the defensive guy. Right here in the middle is, I think, where he can exist at his best. And also, this might be the first time in 3 years that he can make a mistake and a coach will leave him out there. Because he didn't have confidence with the Revs. And when he started here, he was fighting for time. Peter Vermees can say to him, you're my guy right now. You've got 3 months. Prove to me that you deserve to be out there. So... We'll see.
And if he doesn't, they have options. You could move Felipe Gutierrez back and play Gianluca Busio a little bit farther up. Your guy, Busio. Maybe Zalalem gets some more opportunities, but it's probably Gutierrez and then run it through. Figure it out. We'll see what happens with Sporting Kansas City. I hate to say it, but I got to say it. Home against New England feels like a pretty good elixir for a lot of teams right now.
Are you on? I'm on the 12 points and six. Is anyone else with me?
I'll go with you.
You also have the sweatshirt on, so I feel like you have
at
to.
At home, I feel like 12 points from... So you're saying 2 points per match?
Wait, it's not a whole thing. It's a
shade
yes
under.
Or no.
I'm going it's a shade under, all right? I'm going a shade under. I got to go against
you're
you.
Going 11.5 points.
I can't be with you. Sunday's games, national TV games, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Minnesota hosting D.C., still trying to sing Wonderwall. They have not had that opportunity yet because they drew 0-0. Zil-zil is what I went for
Zil-zil.
There.
Zil-zil. Zilch.
Zlatan just takes over, huh? he plays one game. I'm trying to change 0-0 to Zil. They want to sing it. They haven't looked great. They looked better when they were on the road.
The L.A. game was a little rough, which was odd, too, because you looked at it and you were like, this is going to be a 6-6 game.
I thought it was going to be.
Based on what they'd been. Molino getting back out there, he just doesn't have it yet. Like, there's just no pop to his movements, and he looked gassed 20 minutes into this one. But I think for Adrian Heath over the long term, he's going to try and play him through that so that he gets a situation where he's starting to peak and Darwin Quintero is playing at his prime. Because that, I think, is in Adrian Heath's mind what takes them to the next level. And Jan Gregis is a big loss just because I don't think Rasmus Schuler is at anywhere near his level in possession. And so it hurts their attack at a lot of times. And you just saw them bypass that midfield constantly. And Ozzy obviously helping to drop deep because what Zlatan brings in this one. But it was just long balls to try and find Darwin. Rodriguez works hard but isn't a game changer. And I had a guarantee on Abu Dunladi.
It's not looking good on that one. Not looking great on that
one. Not looking good.
I know Adrian Heath was really happy about this shutout, as he should be. Any shutout this team gets, they should be extremely happy about it because it just hasn't gone that way for 2+ years. But, Bobby, part of me thinks that...
Pizza party per shutout,
yeah,
for sure.
Part of me thinks that LA is actually a great matchup for them defensively because they're not going to try to pull them around and play between the lines necessarily. They're going to just try to get the ball wide and cross it in, and then you have Ike Opara and you have Coleman, and it's pretty straightforward. If it's not straightforward, NYCFC showed that. If you want to combine and have movement and get your fullbacks forward and have them in the final third, all of a sudden it's super gappy. But if it's straightforward and it's just crosses, Minnesota can deal with that.
I think everything you said is spot on, and I have nothing to add.
Good. Good. They take on DC, and DC have an interesting stat here.
Yeah, Steven Streff tweeted this one out, and he said that 2018 DC had 10 points on the road from 17 games with one win. In 2019, they have 10 points from 4 games they've yet to lose on the road so far.
Big win, 1-0 against Columbus Crew SC. We had a lot of people hit us up and say, how does Caleb Porter fix this? Fix being the attack that's not creating enough chances, the attack that was even more reliant on crosses on Wednesday night than the LA Galaxy's was. That game, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Let's talk Seattle
LAFC.
Can I
just throw something in there? Because I don't know we've discussed this enough. Columbus Crew arguably had the best fullbacks in the league coming into the season, and both of them are missing.
Yeah, for sure.
So that is a huge part of everything that's happening. Is attack that wasn't good enough under Berhalter. It's not getting better under Caleb Porter.
Especially for the way Porter wants to play. He didn't do a ton in Portland because he didn't have the guys, but his ideal version of the game is those outside backs being main contributors in the attack.
And that's where some of that service for Jesse's artists would come from, and some of the space you would think for Pedro Santos and Justin Miram or Robinho to get free and make something happen. And then the orchestrator, of course, Pipa Higuain behind him. A loss at home for the Crew. They won't like that. The big game, the rematch, Seattle LAFC on Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Of course, LAFC won 4-1 last weekend to set this one up. Bob Bradley had some interesting comments this week. Paul Tenorio was in L.A., and he's on the phone now. Paul, how's it going, man?
It's going well. I'm excited for that rematch. If it's as good of a performance as I saw in L.A. last week when the two teams met, it should be some more good soccer to watch, man.
We get it, Paul. You were in L.A., all right? We got it. It's all covered. If you follow him on Twitter, if you read The Athletic, you know Paul was in L.A. But an interesting story did come out, and when Bob Bradley speaks these days, he tends to say things that make headlines. He basically talked to you about how soccer should be played in reference to the way LAFC is playing right now, and he's basically saying, if you go and watch a game and see two teams slugging it out and they don't have any ideas and it's just a wrestling match and everything else, it drives him crazy. It is also, in his parlance, a four-letter word per se. What did Bob say and why did he say it?
Well, the question actually came in a press conference, and you know, I asked him if it came in two thoughts. First, I asked him if he felt like his team was setting the standard in MLS right now for style of play. And, you know, he said no. He thought that wasn't fair to teams like Toronto a couple years ago, Atlanta last year, even Red Bulls and Sporting Kansas City, that he feels play good soccer in different ways, have a clear identity, and try to accomplish those things. But that led him on to this second part of the rant, which is he feels like there aren't enough teams in MLS that attempt to do that. And really, right on down the line through the lower divisions and into youth soccer, that the lack of ideas and the lack of attempt to create an identity and to give players a job and instructions of how to play the game and then stick to that and really teach it and drill it, he feels like that's lacking. And I think there was some frustration there just kind of based on some of the other conversations I had with Bob and other quotes from the press conference, you know, coming off of the game against Vancouver, which sat in a low block all game and made things difficult. It was not easy to play the game he wanted to play, but he respected the tactics, right? That's part of the game. But there are other games where they played and they've been fouled constantly, teams that just try to break up the rhythm, aren't really trying to accomplish anything other than to stop the other team from playing decent soccer. That seems to really bug him. And, you know, even in the kind of the reactions around this story, you know, I think Bob stands by what he said, and you'll probably hear him say it again in the future. He really believes that there needs to be an emphasis within, especially MLS, of trying to play a certain way. And that doesn't have to be, you know, Alexi Lalas and I kind of got into it on Twitter back and forth. What is good soccer? That doesn't have to be the way LAFC plays. But when you look at the examples that Bob pointed to in that quote, you know, those are all teams that have a clear identity and a clear system that they're trying to teach and input into their players and input into young players. And I think that's what he feels is lacking overall in the league.
And Paul, it seems to me that if you were to give the Peter Vermeeses, Jesse Marshes, and these other five or six coaches, whatever truth serum Bob Bradley took in the last few years, they would say the same thing. This isn't a secret amongst the elite, but they're perfectly fine with it because they continue to win while everyone else flounders.
Absolutely. I mean, there is, you can see, like you're saying, you look around the league, you can see the teams and the coaches that have always instituted this with their teams, right? They're the ones that are successful pretty much no matter the budget. You know, Greg Berhalter in Columbus didn't have a huge budget, won games. Peter Vermees is not working on a budget like the big team, has a clear identity, knows how he wants his team to play, teaches it over and over. No matter who comes into Sporting Kansas City, they play the Sporting way, right? They've had a lot of success. When you look at Atlanta under Tata Martino, the quotes that some of the players have about, you know, Tata saying, I remember Michael Parker saying, it's okay to make mistakes. That was Tata's point early on. This is the system we're going to play. It's okay if you're making mistakes early on in this system because we're going to teach you how to play this way and it's going to be successful. So, you know, you're right. I mean, you look around the league, there aren't a lot of teams. The vast majority of teams actually don't do this, and they suffer as a result. And I think that, you know, I think there's also frustration because when you go kind of pull back, it holds back the rest of the league, right? Because if everyone starts to do it, the quality of the entire league is going to go up. And I think that's where some of this frustration is. Bob Bradley, he cares about LAFC winning, of course. He wants to win. But I think he also cares about American soccer and wanting the sport to get better in this country.
Rematch, Seattle LAFC, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on ESPN. Let's talk training compensation and solidarity payments. Paul, you had a very good article out on The Athletic about this explaining it. Jeff Carlisle had one on ESPN. There's an explainer on MLSsoccer.com. So if you are not subscribed to The Athletic, don't think that you can't learn about this. MLS has never participated in training compensation and solidarity payments. To kind of sum it up for the folks at home out there, training compensation is when a club is compensated when a player, prior to the end of the season of his 23rd birthday, signs his first professional contract in another country. So there's a scheduling mechanism that will allow that team that developed him to collect money in that case. Solidarity payments are when the transfer is between two countries and it's a percentage of that fee. So Christian Pulisic goes for $75 million. The clubs that developed him, in theory, would get a percentage of that amount.
To add to that, Andrew, MLS clubs have paid solidarity payments. It has been included in the transfer fees to then get passed on. They just haven't received it.
It's a good clarification. Also, another clarification that I'm sure you would make, Paul, is all of this is negotiable. So let's just start here. What does this mean for MLS clubs and American and Canadian players?
Well, I think the biggest thing for MLS clubs is they feel finally like they are protected. Because MLS and U.S. soccer didn't recognize the FIFA rules for training compensation, we've seen a number of young American players develop in MLS academies and outside of MLS academies, but in this case, MLS academies that move overseas on free transfers. And that means those clubs are not compensated for the players. And when you're in a fully funded academy, you know, there's a significant amount of investment that goes into a young player to get them, especially when they're a professional prospect. So Weston McKennie is probably the best example because he's gone on to play so well at Schalke early on. Dallas wanted to sign Weston McKennie. They weren't able to. He left for free. That's straight up, that's money out of your pocket. And it's a loss in two ways. It's a loss in all the money that they invested in Weston McKennie, who had joined the academy at a very young age and been developed for several years at FC Dallas. And then it's a loss in that you receive no compensation when he goes to Europe. So now that MLS is able to receive training compensation, they can lose a player for free and still benefit, at least in to make the money back that they put into the development of the player. So it's a huge moment in that the owners who are pouring all this money into academies feel like they have a chance at another revenue stream and a little bit of insurance in case they're not able to sign the players. And I think that's probably the most important part because people ask why MLS now feels like they're protected from antitrust legislation, and it's because there were some owners in MLS that were looking at the situation and saying, you know, how much longer can we afford to invest in youth development if we don't start to see the benefits, right? If we don't start to see a revenue stream come out of it, you know, losing that investment from MLS owners far outweighs some of the arguments of the negatives of training compensation, which I know we'll get into later. So I think, you know, when we talk about the protection that MLS owners have, this is a big deal because there were some owners that were starting to say, hey, you know, why is it worth it for me to put $1.5, $2 million a year into Academy if I'm not seeing a return on that investment?
So I'm a fan of an MLS club, right? And I'm trying to understand this, and the details are murky. What is my next step? What's the next time I'm going to hear about this?
Well, hopefully your MLS club has a decent academy that's producing some professional prospects. And so there's probably two ways you'll hear about it. One, if that player has European interest and is looking to sign overseas, that young MLS academy player is going to go to his club and say, I have this interest from a European team. I'd like to pursue it. I'd like to go to Europe. Your MLS team now has two things available to them that they didn't have before. One, they have the right to offer that player a contract, which gives them the option of hopefully keeping that player within the MLS team, and you get to go watch that young homegrown prospect in your first team games if he chooses to sign that pro contract. If he chooses to sign with Europe anyways, you know that your club will receive training compensation for that player. So it's no longer a major loss with no financial implications for your club. Now, at the very least, the team gets a few $100,000 for losing the player, and everyone moves on. So that, to me, is kind of the summation of what it means for each individual MLS club.
All right, Paul, you mentioned Weston McKennie. Can you give us some examples from the past, the present, and the future that this might affect?
Well, I think, you know, another example, if you look at Weston McKennie, recently we've seen two LA Galaxy homegrown prospects go over to Germany as well, Yuli Yanez and Alex Mendez. Both of them went on free transfer. So two players that the Galaxy rated, two players of the Galaxy have said even now that they would be interested in signing, that they lost for free. You know, with the future, it's a little bit more difficult just because we don't know all of the Academy prospects. And at this point, you know, they're just starting to execute this program. But if you look at, you know, any MLS Academy right now, I'm sure a lot of you guys, Goss and others that were at GA Cup, Bobby, you know, every team has a young prospect that probably in the system that they're looking at as a potential signee. Now that player is going, the team is going to have protection around that player. You know, and I think that's the most important thing. It doesn't mean that every single homegrown prospect is going to stay in MLS. It doesn't close the door to those players where they can't go to Europe. All it does is it gives MLS teams protection, a chance to sign the player, and then a chance to recoup the money, maybe make some money on the player if that player chooses to go to Europe.
Paul, how are MLS front offices reacting to this around the league? Are they excited? Are they bummed? What's the general feel from the people you're talking to?
I think generally, I don't even know if excited is the right word. I think they're relieved. There was a lot of frustration in MLS front offices at the prospect of losing players for free out of the academies. And not every team lost players, but, you know, it was not easy for FC Dallas to see Weston McKennie leave. It was frustrating for the LA Galaxy when they lost these two players to Germany over the last year. And that's not been a secret. And so to finally have something in place that protects the teams, that gives these GMs a chance to focus and sell to their owners why it's important to invest money in the academy and to say, look, even in the worst case scenario, we're still protected on that investment. I think there's a sense of relief for MLS GMs. They feel like this gives them a lot of protection, and it allows them to focus on youth development without fearing the losses that could come by losing a player for free. That's a big deal. You know, there were teams that were hesitating as to how much money they were going to pour into development. I think, you know, this also kind of opens things up for what the next steps could be for MLS academies. Kind of the knockdown effect, as I'm talking to GMs and even a couple people above GMs within MLS teams, is that idea of, hey, maybe now then there's more protection. There's a chance to open up the MLS Academy territories. You know, maybe that's the next step now, because owners are going to be more willing to invest the money that it would take to bring a kid like a Busio, who's from North Carolina, house them at Kansas City. Or, hey, if you're Houston and you're going to spend resources to go recruit the New York market or the LA market, it's going to be worth it for you because you know you'll have protections with that player. So I think that's where the GMs start to get excited, is because they're kind of looking down the road at how this maybe transforms the youth development market for MLS teams, now that owners feel like they are protected from even more significant losses than there has been already with academies. Because you got to remember, with academies, there's no guarantees. You know, you're putting 1.5 to 2 million, sometimes more, into your academies, and you're only producing 3 or 4 or 5 pros over a 10-year period. You know, you've got to hit on those in order to make that money back. Now you have a little bit more of a revenue stream that's opened up, a little bit more potential revenue to come in that maybe offsets the losses that come with youth development.
Interesting potential trickle down there. Paul, we'll let you go here on one more. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter, Paul Tenorio, and at The Athletic is where his work is now, along with Sam Stashkill, the Bird Dog. What do the detractors say here? Why are they saying what they're saying? There's got to be two sides of the story.
Yeah, well, the union basically believes that this limits opportunity for American players, because American players right now, or before this happened, could go overseas and it would be on a totally free transfer. It would cost absolutely nothing for those European teams to bring in American players. So it's less about the Weston McKinneys of the world, who are going to a Bundesliga team that has plenty of money and is happy to pay a little bit more for a player like Weston McKennie. Where it has a bigger impact is for players going to, you know, to smaller leagues, maybe in Scandinavia, or even to smaller clubs in the lower divisions of the bigger European countries, where it's now maybe they look at a player and say, well, we'd love this player on a free, but if we're going to have to pay $200,000 for the player, we're not interested anymore. So it's limiting opportunities. You know, I and others argue that what this does is it puts the U.S. on the level with the rest of the world. The U.S. has been, U.S. American players have been advantaged, have had an advantage over players in the rest of the world because they have been free, whereas everyone else recognizes training compensation. They aren't disadvantaged now compared to the rest of the market. They're just on a level playing field, whereas before they had an advantage. So it's a difficult argument to make when you're comparing Americans to the rest of the world, but when you're comparing Americans to the way they the system functioned before and the way it functions now, then yes, there's a disadvantage in place compared to the way it used to be.
All right, Paul Tenorio of The Athletic, thank you for helping us cover that, man. Good luck with everything. Sorry that Sam's now in New England, so your buddy's gone. I hope that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. We're spending a lot more time on the phone now and a lot less time enjoying sandwiches at my local deli. So it's sad, but, you know, I'm handling it okay. I guess we'll probably end up moving to FaceTime at some point, you know.
Yeah.
Life needs a lot of attention.
Life will go on. You got to keep that text thread going. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks, guys.
All right, big thanks to Paul. Follow him on Twitter, at Paul Tenorio. Just want to make you... I'm not going to be able to resist. He touches back. He reacts. That's the child that I am.
It makes it itchy.
Wow. Wow. So we did not get in the black trash bag of swag. And when we do that, that means the mailbag has started. 401-206-0MLS. Please text us, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. If email is your thing, dig around in here. We have a winner who is apparently a Philadelphia Union fan. His name is Matty Lip, FC Lipman. 154 points in week 8. The double game week did not start that well for me personally. Got the Union kid out of there. Let's see. I'm going to – I think it's Andre Blake. I think it's Andre Blake.
Matty Lip, you owe me one. Yes, you owe me one.
There was seeing eye.
No, I didn't look down. Really. I never look in the black chat. Get out of here.
Would you – if subpoenaed, would you testify?
Yeah, 100%.
To that?
I did not know what was coming out of that bag.
Okay, so we have from Anders in the booth, video review, going back to it.
Well
Anders,
done.
Yep, uh-huh. Says he did not look down. So no penalty here. No red card.
Scout's honor.
That is a good pull out of the black trash bag full of swag. Of course, if you want a free signed jersey, you have to be in the league and you have to win a week. You cannot win twice. So those who have already won, just know that you can't win again. You can sign up at any time for this league. It doesn't matter.
Pennsylvania.
So go sign up. All right, let's talk expansion. Brian, obviously in Charlotte, he says, yeah, because he says club number 30 belongs in Charlotte. It's a major market. It's a booming population and economy, proven appetite for soccer, Gold Cup, and ICC matches drawing 50K plus, and an owner with the cash to make it happen. David Tepper sees what Arthur Blank has done just a few hours away, says Brian, and seems really committed to replicating it. CLT, that is Charlotte Independence, also fills a massive geographic gap in the franchise map, DC to Atlanta. Give me my club, he says. We shall see.
Charlotte? I love it.
You like Charlotte?
So I used to spend quite a bit of time in Charlotte. I worked, I was in the NASCAR beat. So I was in Charlotte all the time. And
closed wheel racing.
It is a fantastic city. And it's also one of these cities, a lot like, it reminds me a lot of Nashville, and that the people that move there just completely like embrace the teams. And it's just like, it's a really, really solid sports city. And I think that it would do so well there. Also, you have to take into account all the collegiate soccer that's around. And there's so, I mean, it's a huge thing in that area. And so I feel like it's already there. I think the fan base is already in place in that region. And then to add into those rivalries with Atlanta and with Nashville, I think it would just create this really, really cool kind of geographical patch there of soccer crazy fans.
And you mentioned college soccer, but Busio, like, there is a ton of talent in that area. And North Carolina FC is doing a good job. They have an academy of producing some of them, but it just takes it to the next level if you bring an MLS side in.
Would be cool.
It's weird to learn that Susanna is actually a Southerner at heart. Chicago girl, but she is undoubtedly.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I feel it deep in my soul. Anytime I go like to one of those cities, I do feel at home.
You come back with a glow.
Yeah.
Like, you have
her soul sings.
South.
How do you feel on what is it? Old Country Road. Old Town Road?
Oh, okay. Love.
I'm still.
Love.
I'm not going to out myself as a cultural
noob.
Love.
Can I get two bars of Lady Gaga real quick?
Wow.
Tell me something, boy.
Ooh, I like it. Between Suzanne and
I. That might have to be the new intro.
You might have to have a sing-off on this show. Dan on Twitter.
Who is singing against Susanna?
I am.
Why are you just...
Mindy says I have a good voice, man. She says I have a great voice.
That's the grossest thing I've ever
heard. Great voice, man. Dan says, how do you guys see the division shaping up when teams 28, 29, and 30 come in? Would St. Louis be in the West or the East? Will there be three divisions by 2022? Of course, St. Louis, we don't know, will be in, but it sure looks like 28 and 29 will go to Sacramento and St. Louis, as you've been following this news. I took the liberty of kind of drawing some things out here. Currently, you have 12 teams per conference, 24 teams. We know that there are three more coming in, so we would add Miami and Nashville to the east in my math to bring that up to 14. You would add Austin and Sacramento, assuming they get in, of course, to the west, bringing it up again to 14 there. Then St. Louis can kind of go either way. You kind of have to make a choice there.
They have to be in the same conference as KC.
I agree with that. So then you would, let's say we're putting them in the west in this case. Well, then that might eliminate another team from the West, unless you unbalance it and go a different direction. Commissioner Don Garber had mentioned Las Vegas and Phoenix.
Yep.
So those would be the West ones. You have Detroit and Charlotte on the other side. So that might open up Charlotte to be team number 30 in this kind of exercise here.
Mm-hmm. But or you just fix the whole thing and make three divisions.
Okay,
and
well,
a Midwest division.
Here's the three divisions, which is harder than you think because they don't break down perfectly. I have the West being the LA clubs, San Jose, Sacramento, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, RSL, Colorado, and then a question mark. You got to find another team in there. Bobby's not into this. Central would be Minnesota.
For anyone listening to the podcast, Bobby just showed his computer, which says this topic does nothing for me.
Right. I like the little bit of little brevity here from Bobby.
What else does he have open on his browser?
He's also smart enough nothing to go wrong, so that's good. Central would be Minnesota, Sporting
well
KC,
played.
Dallas, Houston, Austin, Chicago, Columbus, Cincinnati, Nashville, and then maybe St. Louis in there. The East would be Montreal, Toronto, New York City, New York, Red Bulls, DC, Philly, New England, Orlando, Atlanta, and Miami.
So what's confusing about this? Seems pretty clean.
You have to find that Western team still. Otherwise, you have to move one out of the Central division, but you can't break up, in my opinion, the Texas teams.
Right.
So then maybe it's Minnesota, I guess, that you might move into the West, but they're definitely Central.
You want that NFC North rivalry. I know you guys are buying your Minnesota, Chicago, St. Louis stuff going on.
I mean, there's a lot to go into here. Bobby, you can just kind of check out here. Maybe meditate a little bit.
Sounds like we need 40 teams.
Yeah. Greg Ingram says, I'm dreaming big here, so here's my dream season structure. He's from Bloomington, Indiana. This is for 32 teams, he says, but could be adjusted. In Greg's scenario, the regular season is 30 games. home and away. It's all in-conference opponents. All of it within your conference, true home and away, round robin. The travel is good. You get a matchup on both those sides. It builds anticipation for cross-conference playoff clashes because he has an interesting playoff format here. It's the top eight teams from each conference, so 50%, four groups. So it's group play. Each group has two teams from the East, two teams from the West. It's home and away in the groups, so the top 50% of the league gets 36 games, so those owners get more revenue, he says. Those teams get more opportunities. Those fans get more opportunities. The team that wins the group moves on, so four teams move on into semifinals that are single elimination into MLS Cup. And here's the wrinkle from Greg on this one. Those last games, the semis, two games there, and MLS Cup are played in one market, all in the same place. So you basically replace All-Star as the gathering point with that. That's where all the fans would show up. I guess that means that you also would do it in a neutral venue?
I think you just pre-choose one. And if
you have
someone,
to for
like
the travel and organization, I think.
And if someone happens to host it, like that's good for them. The final four part, that's what I'm calling that. The final four part. That part's cool. The rest of it, I don't know. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with anything. I honestly don't care as long as it's structured. Like, I wouldn't be heartbroken if I find out that one team's not coming to a market. You know, if I lived in a market all the time, because whatever, there's 30 teams. It is what it is. Just as long as there's some form semblance of structure to it, and it's not just like pure chaos where it's like, I don't understand why the Timbers play Red Bulls three times this season and Seattle plays DC once, and it's just all over the place.
Bobby, as a former player, I know you have you've expressed your lack of interest in this, and I think you're probably doing work right now instead of meditating, which is an interesting choice on your part. How about players? Do they care? Do they care about this stuff?
Oh, we're still doing this?
Yeah, we're still,
still talking about schedules.
We're here,
Players is travel is big for players. I mean, flying across the country is both not fun and also hard, so less travel would be more optimal for the players.
Can I just say, if you want to know my views on this, you can go to The Athletic. Sam Stagecoach writes a piece about the Ultimate Championship, so you can find that there. If not, you can go on Twitter, at Sam Stagecoach. If you're in the New England area, just knock on his door. He's the expert on the Ultimate Championship, which is the correct structure for Major League Soccer.
Wait, I have a very important question for Bobby. As a player, when you're traveling across the country, do you get to keep your airline, like your points?
Oh, yeah.
You earn those points.
And then most players, so like in Dallas, we flew American because it's a Dallas base.
Yeah.
Most of us got the American credit card. So then we'd just multiply all the points
that we
got.
And we can
stack up. So most players do their postseason trip with their family on the points that were accumulated.
So
Susanna's considering joining a Major League Soccer.
They're points guys. MLS players are points guys.
Oh, yeah,
they're
for
experts
sure.
in this field.
And it's a little bit iffy on what hotels you get, because sometimes if you don't actually book your own stay and a group company books your hotel points, you don't get those.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get the hotel points.
Does it make the travel a little more easier to swallow when you're like, well, I'm traveling 5,000 miles, but.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a
I'm going to Tahiti.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it feels good to get the points, for sure.
Interesting. The game within the game.
It's a payoff somewhere.
I like that, Susanna. You're bringing a different sensibility. Than we had here.
I'm like, when can I go on vacation?
Yeah, exactly. You're pretty good at that game too, by the way. The Toronto Duck is good at the mailbag. He emails this out of Nani Gaitan, Nico Gaitan with the Fire, and Marco Fabian, who will have the best season. Nani right now is having the best from a stats perspective. Four goals, four assists. Gaitan has two assists in less time, starting to break into the lineup. And Marco Fabian has two goals and no assists. He's been in and out of the lineup with both injury and suspension. Predictions?
I just want to say early on in this, I was really excited for Nico Gaitan. He is not moving the way that I had hoped he would be moving. Right? He just looks crickety. Is that fair?
I don't think crickety is a word.
Creaky?
You combined creaky and rickety, which I respect. So crickety. Crickety is now going to be parlance.
Although I think of a cricket, and then I think of like bouncing around, like quite lithe. So
creaky.
I think more of this, still like
rickety,
like
rickety,
sound,
rickety,
rickety.
Right, rickety, and
that's the
and,
word.
He's looking creaky. I mean, he goes to decelerate, and it's taking an extra couple steps. So that has me a little bit worried. This is an awesome question, though.
So you're not going Nico Gaitan, is what
I don't
I'm
think so. I think the early easy answer is Nani. He's looked good. He's looked into it. His style seems to fit. And I know we thought early on that maybe his style wouldn't fit what Orlando want to do, that he would want to get isolated wide 1v1. But his ability in transition has been fun to watch. I think Nani is the easy answer on this one.
I'm going to go Nani too. I just think he will see the field the most, and I just think his role is the most obvious.
I think Fabian's team will be better. Yeah. At
I
the
agree
end,
with that.
And I think Fabian will be a piece of it. I don't know if he'll be as central as Nani, but I think he will still be a very important player for.
I'll accelerate this question. 15 games into the season, do we think Marco Fabian is a first 11 player for the Philadelphia Union?
Yes.
Wow. Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Why you seem to have when you ask those questions?
In what spot? In what spot? Do we feel Madunian's definitely the six? We feel Bedoya is one of the other two.
Has to be
the new guy. Looks like he's going to fit pretty well into the system. It's hard to feel they're going to take out Brennan Aaronson in the near future.
But do you think they will continue to play with two forwards?
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
That's a hard question because they have diverted a few times. But Marco Fabian hasn't been great. I think this is something to keep an eye on if you're watching around the league.
All right. Okay. Steven in Seattle says DPs as coaches. He was before the DP rule, but El Pibe, Carlos Valderrama, as Miami's first coach would make waves.
Yes.
Oh, it would make
yes.
Hair waves.
Give me all the hair.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I like that. I'm not sure it would, not sure it's like what Paul McDonough's going to do, but this is all about dreaming, right? It's not about reality.
Yeah, although I will say, because I don't really have a response to this, that
makes
sense.
Yeah, it's hard to have a response.
DC United, Wayne Rooney.
Marco Echeverry. El Diablo.
No, Wayne Rooney. No,
Eddie Pope?
Well, he's not. He wasn't a DP, but he's the greatest player in U.S.
That's a good point. But
history.
We're not. But we like pulled it back since we have El Pibe.
Yeah, but El Pibe was a DP. Before it was a rule.
Yeah, okay. I guess
as was Echeverry.
Yeah, Echeverry. I think throw in maybe Jaime Moreno in there.
But I'm still going to go with Rooney.
Okay. All right, how about this question? Anonymous from Parts Unknown. Please send us your name and your location. Says it's clear that Matt Beisler is being prepped to take over for Vermees one day.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to flip this around and say, who are the current players that you are going to peg as a coach, and where are they going to be coaching? You could have them with their current team. Let's say they're a legend, a la Kyle Beckerman mm-hmm. with RSL.
Yep.
Let's say it's Matt Beisler with Sporting Kansas City. Let's say you want to dream big and do something random. What are you going to do?
Beckerman's definitely the best money, right?
You
who knows
so?
When it'll be, but that feels almost like a near certainty to me that he gets the next, whenever Mike Petke isn't the head coach, that Beckerman gets it.
Do you
it.
Think that he's Pablo-esque and just talks about Ooh. Heart, desire, passion?
No.
Okay.
No, I do not.
Cool.
Wando, is that another good one?
That's another good
Wando
one.
Wando is a good one.
That is a good one. Okay.
I was going to throw Shea Salinas in there as well.
For sure. They would be the duo.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you know for who sure. I would love to play for?
Yeah,
I
go
think
for
so.
It.
Chad Marshall.
Oh, I was going to. I wanted to guess.
Chad Marshall. I think it would be so great. I love
Why
that
Chad
guy.
Chad Marshall? That's not
just
something that would come to mind.
Deadpanning you?
Yeah, completely.
Hey, Susanna, you're starting. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. No, I was just kidding.
No, I just think he's a rare. He's so witty. And I think he's really, really smart. And I think when...
Why do you think he's really smart?
I know, Bobby.
Wow.
Those center backs. Wow. They're so clever.
Also,
he's tall.
You guys
he's blonde. Yeah. He's blonde.
Yeah,
that's why.
He's blonde. It's definitely
because he's blonde.
It has nothing to do with...
the college
with
that
going
he attended.
To, yeah. I'm not even going to say the words. You know what? I'm going to throw one out there. Because I think Michael Bradley is going to be a coach.
Oh, yeah.
That's
so the question is, where might he be a coach?
Toronto
is a good shout. But I'm going to throw out there, and I know that things did not go the way that the Bradleys liked in New York / New Jersey when Bob was let go and Michael. I'm just saying, Jesse Marsh made the jump. It's a decent route to Europe, maybe.
The Bradleys don't want to play that kind of soccer. Michael would not be okay playing Red Bull soccer.
Okay, but what if it shifts? What if things change?
I don't think
okay,
that's
going to
happen.
You shot that down.
Michael Parker.
You did that pretty well.
New
England?
Yeah. Why is that?
You saying New England or
New England or Atlanta?
Oh, that's good. Parkhurst back to New England is good.
Thank you.
Okay,
that's what I do.
We'll take more of these.
What about here's an outside? What about Boniac in Houston?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's
I like that
really
one
good.
Too.
Very good one.
I like that one too. And he brings up the twins.
His two kids can play. Yeah.
Bingo.
Boniac,
it's a little bit of a Bradley
situation.
Did you
see the picture of them going? I think they went double tuxedos the other day.
They are so cute.
Or Univision National
tuxedo shopping for toddlers right now.
I love the Boniac twins.
Extremely cute. We will end it with this one here. Nathan in Maine says, there seems as though there's a lot of argument to be had about where asterisks belong when it comes to MLS accomplishments, records, quality of players and teams, competitives, etc. It also seems to be a league of distinct eras. Pre-DP, pre-TAM and GAM, new versus old playoff format, buying league versus selling league. His question is, should there be asterisks on records? in the age of expansion or otherwise? Should there be asterisks, you know, whether explicit or otherwise, on Joseph Martinez's single season goal record? Landon's record of all-time goals? Maybe you look in there at, like, the assists, Red Bull's shield runs, MLS Cup wins because there were less teams at less times.
I just want to say I'm a big asterisk guy. I'm a big asterisk guy on championships, on records. But I don't think any of these are good examples, because that's part of the beauty of sports, right? It's hard. The fact that we have the ambiguity between eras allows for conversation. So there should definitely be asterisks at times. None of these mentioned are the right moments.
Okay, well, we have to get out of here, but we'll
asterisk people? I mean, come on. Either you're an asterisk person or you're not.
I'm going to asterisk.
I've never thought about it.
What kind of person are you?
I'm going to asterisk Bobby's asterisk comments, so that doesn't count for the show.
Gotcha.
So you're an asterisk person. Andrew, what kind of person are you?
Not really, no.
No?
No.
What's the dot, dot, dot called?
Ellipsis?
That's it.
Yeah.
Big ellipsis girl.
Gotcha. Well, that leaves us dot, dot, dot here. We'll leave this for another day. If there are records that you think need asterisks, if you're an asterisk person like Bobby Warshaw, hit us up. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Big weekend. Watch it. Match Day Central. We'll put a bow on it. Susanna,
woo!
Doyle, and is it?
Kalen.
Kalen.
Yeah.
Yes. You can watch that after the conclusion of Galaxy Real Salt Lake on Sunday. We're out of here. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. We'll be right back.